can now start with our second topic. Matt, you want to introduce? Is Yulia going to introduce?
I think I will again just say a couple of words really briefly about our starting point and then turn it over to Matt to talk about what we actually propose. So today in the practice statement, what it really emphasizes as part of the objective of management commentary, it's providing the context for financial statements and providing information that supplements and complements financial statements. It emphasizes the need to provide management view and provide information users to users, but it doesn't really elaborate on it any further. Now, what's particularly important, I think, for today's discussion, that when we revised conceptual framework earlier this year, we clarified the objective of general purpose financial reporting. And again, the overall objective is to provide useful information to investors, lenders, and other creditors. But in the revised conceptual framework, we emphasize the need to provide information that allows users to assess management stewardship of the entity's resources. So this is alongside with providing information that is useful to assess the entity's prospects for future cash flows. And in many cases, such information will be the same, and in some other cases, information needed to assess stewardship would be different from information needed to assess cash flows. And on a very high level, we think that both of those aspects are quite important for management commentary. And I think with that quick introduction, Matt, if you want to take it through.
Thank you.
And I'll perhaps go to slide five, first of all, which when we started this exercise, we looked at what others were doing in terms of objective settings for their management commentary equivalents. And I don't take too much science from slide five because it is a very subjective classification. But it is really just an illustration that there are many ways of approaching the question of what is the objective of a management commentary or an MD&A. So what we've done is try and step back from that. We've looked at the way user calls for better management commentary type information have been framed. We've looked at some of the areas of concern that were discussed in the back in November at the board in terms of where the gaps lay in practice, and we've sought to build an approach that addresses that, and importantly trying to create something that in terms of a set of objectives for the management commentary that essentially provides a test of success for a company's management commentary. So a short set of objectives that you can look at and you can say, yes, this management commentary delivers on those objectives, or no, it doesn't. In terms of the way that others have approached the different objectives, you see some very high-level objective settings, so context for the financial statement, support for investment decision making. You also see, particularly in Europe, the phrase development, performance, position, and impacts of the entity. So that's quite common. In some of the Americas, you see more emphasis on earnings quality. You see reference to prospects in some jurisdictions. You see some more operational approaches to the definition of objectives, so strategy, risks, resource stewardship, and of course from integrated reporting you see value creation. So that is a very wide set of approaches. We think and we've sought to capture those at a high level in the approach that's set out on page 7. I'd say really we're having three bites of the cherry here, so we're setting a high-level approach in terms of objectives that align with the conceptual framework, that emphasis on cash flows that could ultimately take you to an emphasis on a sort of fundamentals view of business value. We then have a second layer, which is on the information needs of users, so what information is needed to support user decision-making. And then the third tier underneath that is what's important to the success of the business, what are the things you need to be reporting on, and that really reflects this sort of eyes of management approach to the management commentary. So I just covering in overview each of those elements. So firstly, in terms of the headline objective, and this is on page 8 of the slide pack. So we're making the conceptual framework purpose explicit. When we come on to talk about materiality, we'll perhaps cover some of the challenges or perceived challenges in terms of preparers relating the information they provide into how it will get consumed by users. So part of our thinking there was to make that link more explicit. Importantly also, this approach places the onus on management to provide information that in their eyes is relevant to a fundamental view of business value, rather than the onus on management being to understand particular investors' strategies. So this is something that is designed to be done from management's perspective, management's view of what's relevant. We have the reference to stewardship now in the conceptual framework, so we've brought that in. I think there is a potential risk here. We'll be interested in feedback on this in terms of interpretation. Is this stewardship for the benefit of society as a whole? Is it stewardship in order to support the future cash flows of the entity? So, there'll probably be some questions around whether we got that clear enough, whether it's too clear, whether it's not clear enough. But that sort of covers the headline objective. Then on slide 9, we cover the approach in terms of user needs. And I guess you could argue that this is unnecessary, because if you apply the conceptual framework approach, I think you would get to the same outcome. But we're trying to put some more substance behind how that conceptual framework approach in terms of focus on future cash flows, how that can be operationalized for users, for preparers. And we use the illustration of a water-stressed asset operating on the edge of the Sahara in a number of places during today's discussion. But on slide 9, on the one hand, you could argue that, providing insight into the future cash flows of the entity requires a discussion of the fact that you have a water-stressed asset operating on the edge of the Sahara. But we think if we put some more substance behind that approach, so we're asked people to think, what's their strategy for sustaining the cash flows of the business? Where is it challenged? What are they doing about those challenges? And then what progress have they made in implementing that strategy? And then what are the potential implications of the matter for the future cash flows of the business? We think that by putting that extra substance around the identification of the information to be provided in the management commentary, that should help preparers more readily get to information disclosures that meet user needs. So if you look at the illustrative wording here, and I'll stress this is a straw man wording, and we're interested in your views on the overall direction of the wording rather than the detail when we're discussing the questions. But if you look at the sort of straw man wording, that emphasises information that provides insight into the current performance and position of the business, its strategy, its progress in implementing its strategy, and the implications of that strategy for the future of the business. So that's how we're proposing to implement that user perspective into the business. Then on slide 10, we turn it around and we look at the through the eyes of management view. And again, you might say, well, it should be obvious that if you have a plant on the edge of the Sahara and it's water stressed, then you should be talking about it in the management commentary if it has a future impact on your prospects. But actually, sometimes there's a problem of sort of can't see the wood for the trees, can't see clearly what are the underlying issues in the business that management is perhaps instinctively operating around, navigating around those risks. So we've sought there to make that thought process again more explicit, and that starts with bringing in the idea of the importance of resources for the as they play a role in the future success of the business. So this is resources and relationship that the business depends on for its future success, not just every resource and relationship that the business depends on, and it's the specific resources, not just general discussion of resources, that we're seeking to support here. Then bringing in the external trends and factors as management sees it that are important to the future of the business, and then taking that discussion then to how does that play into the strategy for the business to support the cash flows, the whole life cash flows of the business. So again, trying to sort of provide that step-by-step approach for a preparer to say, what are the really important issues that we need to cover in the management commentary? We're aware that sometimes you get a sort of scattergun approach to disclosures. So you will see an issue identified, such as water stress, but then you'll see quite a vague measure that's difficult to make use of, such as global water consumption, which wouldn't give you a lot of insight in the case of this Saharan plant. So we're trying to put a bit of thought process around how you arrive at the content of the management commentary that is specific to the business. And that, again, is asking preparers to look at the current performance and position of the business. So what does that tell you? Are the trends within the current performance of the business that management is responding to, feels it needs to respond to? It asks the preparer to look at the external trends and factors, the resources and relationships, and that would include the impacts that the business is having on those relationships, to the extent they have the potential then to feed back an impact on the business's future prospects, and the business model and strategy. And this is a process that we think would need to apply across the content elements. So we're not trying to duplicate what we'll be discussing in the when we write in the content elements later on. But we think this is a sort of pervasive view, a way of getting to what's important to the business, what's important to a user to understand those factors, rather than actually describing the detailed content of the management commentary. We pick up on two areas that the approach doesn't explicitly include on pages 11 and 12. The first of those is value creation. I think one of the problems we perceive is that value creation is a very easy concept to understand in broad terms, but a very difficult concept to understand in when it comes to operationalising it. So our thought process has been, how do we provide a more concrete approach that gets you to the same end point? And it does depend on this sort of coming back to what's important to the whole life cash flows of the business, as a way of encapsulating value creation without using the terminology which we feel might get misunderstood. Secondly, in terms of time horizons, and I know this also came up in the discussion earlier on, one of the concerns we've heard in terms of the use of short, medium and long term is, firstly, it leads to questions over, can you define the short term, can you define the medium term, can you define the long term, which is, I think, getting away from the spirit of what we're trying to achieve here, which is a discussion of what's important over the whole life of those cash flows. You can see on slide 12, in the image, you can see how we think short, medium and long term relates to both a user view and a preparer view. But at the moment, we're not proposing to make that explicit, because I think it might cause more confusion than it resolves. The other concern with time horizons is the possibility, particularly if we place an emphasis solely on the long term, is that then you create a defence to non-disclosure of an important matter. If, for example, management believes that it has a tricky challenge coming up in the short to medium term, but it can navigate its way through that. Now, if there is genuine risk and opportunity associated with that challenge, then that's something that we'd like to see in the management commentary. And if we just purely emphasise the long term, then the argument can be, well, it's going to resolve itself over the long term, so we don't need to cover it. So that's the thinking on time horizons. It's definitely not that we don't see short, medium and long term as important. It's just what is the best way of getting that across in a way that won't be misunderstood or abused. So that gives us an overview of our thinking in relation to the setting of objectives. It really did come down to how do we provide that test of success, whether it's an assurer, a regulator, a preparer or a user. Can you look at those objectives and say, this does what it's supposed to do? That's really where we were coming from here. So with that, I'll hand back to open up for questions.
And comments.
Andreas.
Thank you, Matt. Generally speaking, it's hard to disagree with what you've laid out here. The question that I'm asking myself is, if I were a preparer, would I know what I have to do? And in all honesty, I would put a big question mark behind that, because I think there are at least two conflicting objectives here where I would probably need more detail as to which trumps which. And these two objectives are, management commentary is there for management to provide its story. It's through the eyes of management. On the other hand, it ties into the financial package, so you ought to provide all the information that's necessary for an informed and user to make a decision. So if I take your example of the Sahara and just provide you with two facts in order to see whether your answer would be the same as mine. The first thing is the Sahara plant contributes 2% to the group's revenues. Therefore, management would say, yeah, it's probably something to watch, but it's not material from our end.
Yeah.
The users, on the other hand, might just feel differently, especially if, my second criterion, you do have a bank that's providing a loan in order to finance part of the operation of that Sahara plant. So which of the two views trump which? So ought I report on this? Because there are users for whom it is absolutely fundamental, otherwise they don't get the information. Or do I take a strict through the eyes of management approach? And I think in just putting it in the little example, shows the difficulty as to how I reconcile the two views. And we'll come back to that in the next slide when we discuss materiality. I think it is right because you're setting the frame with the conceptual framework at the starting point. So it is obvious that users need come in. But, I mean, squaring that with a management view is almost impossible. At some stage, you probably have to give one preference over the other. And the question that I can't really make out from the slide deck is, what's your view on this?
Okay, well, I think it's probably helpful if I answer that one then. And I think the answer lies in that headline conceptual framework objective. And ultimately, you're asking management to place themselves in the shoes of the user and say, would knowing this matter and would the information that we're going to provide around this matter shift a user's view of the value of the business and the stewardship of the business? And the question can only be answered in those terms, I think. So that's the trumping factor. There are challenges for management in putting themselves in users' shoes, but I don't think we should shy away from that fact here. Does that help?
Well, it does help, but on the other hand, I think it just shows that more clarity is probably needed as to which user are we talking about. Because if you think about, we are talking about the equity investor in the entire group on the parent company, the outcome might be completely different to a provider of capital being a bank that's financing that Sahara plant. If I put myself into their shoes, quite clearly they want to know everything that I could probably provide. So,
yeah, but if he's a creditor, then he will not directly finance the plant. He will not even need to get on curb side.
We can get direct information.
Well, to be discussed.
Lilian?
Yes, thank you.
Project finance, they get direct information.
I think that the examples may be problematic when you are including that in the final version of the management commentary. My first reaction to those examples was the following. I'm accountant-based, and I said if I had such a situation, the first issue for me would be applying IAS 37 or 36, either impair that or make some provisions. I'm sure that I need to have something relating to that. So that came back to what Mary says. The management report needs to be coherent to what you are telling, the story that you are telling through the financial statement. That is my first reaction to that. The second one is that it's okay, we need to stick to what we know, which is the framework, in order to take an objective, but we need to remember that the management commentary is done precisely by the manager. And managers are not familiar with the framework or conceptual framework as we are the accountant. So I'm wondering if they will understand what is mean by a future cash flow or prospectus. When you are talking to them about value creation, they understand better than when you are talking about the future cash flow, when you are they say, oh, I need to publish something prospective or an account and a financial statement which is prospective.
Of course,
and
it's completely impossible to predict cash flows 20 years from now.
Yes, but the perception could be this one. Though, my second comment would be careful of the wording and don't stick too much on the conceptual framework, because it would be very, very confusing. Mm.
So you're arguing for some additional clarity over what the conceptual framework means here?
It is a matter of responsibility. I will wonder if I need, I'm responsible of providing everything prospective in order to help users to build their future cash flow, or if I need to provide what I know that is happening today and what is really tied to my financial statement. This is different. You know, the companies are used to prepare financial plans, and they are not wanting to publish that primarily for competition reasons. So what you are demanding to the management to do? To publish such a final?
No.
But it would be, I know that it's not the intention, but it would be, could be the reaction on that.
Okay, good point. Thank you.
Massimo. Be careful with that thing, because you will have to crawl under the table.
Well, first of all, I would echo Marie on the definition of cash flow. I see the purpose here, notwithstanding. I know some top managers, and therefore this could be a little bit tricky. Of course, cash is king, but then you may land to some promises on the cash flow in 20 years, so there is an issue of terminology. But here I wanna give an answer to the slide 13, question number 3, and I would like to echo what I heard in the first session. And in paragraph A4, information through the eyes of management, I would suggest to insert a specific point on purpose, on vision, mission, and values of a corporation, which is, I would say, a very relevant point. And secondly, I would also to introduce something about governance and remuneration policy, which is another very relevant element in the discussion. So these are my comments on A4 paragraph.
Rodrigo.
Just a couple of comments. I think we're going through the appendix later, right? So I'm not going to comment on that now.
If you've got comments on the overall direction of the appendix, please provide them now.
Perfect. So just one thing about the part where we state that the objective of the information is to be provided through the eyes of management. I know that the objective is not to come up with some kind of interaction between management and users, as is proposed by the IR framework. But even though that should not be the actual focus, I think we should have some wording that would stimulate management to interact with the actual users somehow, even if it's not mandatory or if it's not part of the framework, just as a general guidance piece. In terms of future net cash inflows, I wonder again if there should be any kind of mention to earnings quality, thinking from a more of a dividend perspective from the investor part of the users. And with respect to the appendix, it's been talked before, but it's a very important, at least from my perspective as a preparer, to define clearly what operational information is. Should be a more precise definition of it. And then I don't agree with what's proposed on A5. I think this should not be, I mean, if it's not the objective to say that it's mandatory to include forward-looking information, I believe to be silent would be better than saying it's not required. So I would choose for if the objective of the board is not saying that it's mandatory to include forward-looking information, it would be silent on the topic and not specifically state that. And just a minor comment. I wonder why item B on A4 is not included on A3. It's just it's a tiny thing, but external trends and factors potentially affecting the entity. For me, it looks more like information that should be covered and not identify information that should be included through eyes of management. It's just a minor comment. Thank you.
Marek.
Thank you.
I wanted to also pick up the through the eyes of management material. In our project, and I can only link it to materiality really here, we've recognised that there are different ways of trying to figure out whether something's material. One way of trying to figure it out is to understand users' perspective, and in doing that, you have to make the assumption that they're rational in doing so, because you have you can't assume that all the idiosyncratic ways of looking at things would make sense. But another way of looking at it is thinking about it from the point of view of the business. What matters to running the business, management of the business? But I think that's very different from saying it's through the eyes of management. And what I wonder about there is whether it's possible to explain that as being two different things, really. One is to do with figuring out what's material. I would say that you can make that more objective than saying through the eyes of management by saying what matters to the business, what matters to the objectives and strategies of the business and its operations. And then the other thing is something that's actually, I think, said better on slide 9, is that when you're providing information, one of the aspects of information that's quite important, I think, is to reflect the thought processes that management went through in order to decide on an action or to develop a strategy or a business model. And so it's pervasive. But you could find a different set of words, I think, in two different ways to address through the eyes of management. What I'm concerned about from an assurance point of view is if we say it's through the eyes of management, and that somehow or other, as Andreas was saying, competing with the materiality concept of what's reasonably to be expected, if you like, to influence user decisions, it risks making it less clear that relevance and materiality are just the same as they are in the conceptual framework. So that was probably my main point. I was also wondering whether the term operational really captures the breadth of what we mean by it. I think what you mean by it is everything from purpose, strategy, down through the operations. But to say financial and operational seems to me to not focus on the words that really matter as the context, the starting context. So I wonder if that could be, is a definitional change enough, or is it just in the term? I don't know. The last of my 3 points was on slide 12. Against the long-term cash flows, it says addressing matters relating to. And I wonder if, is the business sustainable in the long run? Whether it's clear what that means. Does it mean that it can survive, simply survive? Does it mean that it will continue to grow? What does that sustainability relate to? Is it to the existence, or is it to the strategy and the business model, or what is it? So could that be made clearer? Thank you.
Matt, I was thinking the fact that we want the management commentary to be concise, doesn't that mean that implicitly there's a different threshold for materiality? I mean, could a water plant that only affects 2% of revenues of a company, could that ever find a place in a concise management commentary?
I think it's very unlikely that it would, because it would be unlikely that 2% impact would shift a user's assessment of the prospects for the business overall, bearing in mind that it's an uncertain event anyway. Having a relatively small impact. So I think that's where you land on that example.
Mark.
Yeah, I think my comment is in the same vein as Marie-Claire's earlier. Just thinking in the Dutch context, there's now in the corporate governance code a requirement for the directors to talk about long-term value creation, and that's an obligation. It's, that may be the case in other countries as well. But I think it is on the mind of management and long-term to actually think about the long-term.
Yeah.
And
So if you just actually try to dodge the issue, so with all respect, I think is what you're proposing here by only talking about cash flows, I think you may not help clarity. So I would say, well, maybe we need to address an explicit statement that the future cash flows includes matters affecting the long term may be desirable. I think you would probably need to build some bridges to explain kind of the short, medium, and long term. That would be my suggestion.
Fair point.
And what also, I think in practice management, when they think about cash flows, they think about cash flows in the short term as opposed to accrual accounting. And they might understand something completely different from when they think about cash flows from long-term value creation.
That's right. So I think you need to make the bridge.
Yeah. Lisa.
So looking at those three questions. I don't see, so in regard to question one, I don't see that the proposed objective is actually a huge departure from what's already there. I think this really effectively makes explicit what I think is implicit already. Matt, on the clarity of the stewardship issue, you mentioned for society versus for the entity. I think it has been made crystal clear by the qualifier of for the entity's economic resources. I think that pretty much keeps that very clear. And I do agree with that approach, but I would nonetheless underscore the point that that the entity's future economic viability is inextricably linked to the value that is created for others. I should point out that that value creation for others, it's rarely expressed in terms of cash flows or economic resources. You know, if we think of customer satisfaction ratios, for example, so we don't speak of cash flows for in terms of the value that's created for others. But I think it is nonetheless important that we build that bridge between the company's economic viability and the value that's created for others. In terms of question two, explicit mention of the business model and its longer term viability. I think that that needs to be made quite clear. Again, Matt, I hear your concerns over the three categories. When we talk of longer term value creation, those three categories of short, medium, and long-term, I understand people do struggle with that. At the other end of the spectrum, you said that perhaps it could be defined value creation as long-term value creation, but the concern that that creates is now that it might preclude disclosures on near-term or short-term performance and prospects. I would hope that there is a compromise between those two extremes. It could be that there is reference made to near and longer term value, which would capture that entire time continuum. And the final point on question three, I would add 2 points to this. One is how governance systems support stewardship of economic resources, again, recognizing that the value that's created for the entity and therefore available for distribution to investors, debtors, and other creditors does rely on the value that's created for others. The second addition would be a discussion on operating context or the operating environment as a natural segue to the external trends and factors that potentially affect the entity, which it has been captured in A4B. I would echo Rodrigo's comments that there is a bit of a discrepancy between the content of A4 versus content of A3, namely the external trends and factors, so item B. Also, I noticed something that did pop out for me. In paragraph 3, there's mention of the entity's performance, whereas in A4, it's entity's financial and operational performance. I would reconcile, I'd be sure to include financial and operating or operational performance in A3 as well. Mm-hmm. So those are the two additions. Now some comments, two comments. In A4C, there's mention of tangible and intangible economic resources. I think the mention of economic there is unhelpful. because I think this inadvertently sort of negates what you've, the point you've made elsewhere is the range of resources and relationships on which the entity relies. So I think, again, that word economic ought to be deleted. You have also helpfully acknowledged opportunities in here in A4E. I also recognize your choice of opportunities and risks, as opposed to risks and opportunities. Oftentimes, the opportunities piece, which is critical to a balanced discussion, gets ignored. And so I would hope that you don't leave it there by mentioning opportunities and risks, but rather in the guidance that it also receives sufficient coverage there. That's it.
Thank you. Chris?
So just a couple of observations. I do think the two principles are right, and I think you do need to restrict it to things that are going to have an impact on future cash flows, because otherwise you're not going to be able to draw the boundary of what's in and what's out. So I think you have to, but I do agree that there's a risk. We need to explain the concept well to make sure that people don't think it's you have to produce an actual set of future cash flows. What you're trying to think about is what other things that are going to create change to the future cash flows.
Exactly.
So I think that's quite important. I was a little bit surprised that you didn't pick up 1.4 from the conceptual framework when you're talking about the stewardship piece, because I actually think that's the critical bit where it talks about, well, what's the efficiency and effectiveness of how you've actually managed the resources. So I'd be wanting to sort of weave that through, because that's helping explain, I think, better what you want to come out of the stewardship piece. And it's been quite an interesting discussion, because I felt there was something missing in this paper, and I think what it is now is I'm not quite sure why you've split it into two pieces and said this is some information that you do from management's perspective and this is some information you need from users' needs. I would have said at the end of the day, everything that you're putting in this report is actually going to be through the eyes of management, but you're trying to address what do your users' needs. And so I think what came for me was when I actually looked at Appendix A, I just felt the order was wrong. So if I was starting off, I'd be saying, well, what's my purpose? Why am I here? What do I think I want to do? What's my strategy for achieving that? What's my business model that actually helps me achieve that? What did I actually do this year in terms of my financial outcomes? So what actually happened? Tell me the story about how all that fitted together. And then I think, as you said later, then you start to go, okay, now where does that leave me? And so what are we going to do next year? And by the way, how well did I actually do against what I said I was going to do last year? And I think if you kind of set it up that way, it doesn't need to be what's through the eyes of management. That's what my users need. And then I think that might help address some of the issues that we've been talking about.
Yeah, so flip it round in a way that's more consistent with how we articulate the materiality discussion later on.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that seems sensible.
Yeah. And then I do think you need to pick up, because I think we are going to have to address what's sort of long-term. Because, again, how long is long-term? You know, at the end of the day, every single thing that we do and value that we create for someone else is going to have a financial impact at some point. But I don't think we can be putting everything in. So there needs to be some sort of natural boundary for what goes in here. I don't quite know how we do that yet, but I think it's going to be very interesting.
I mean, we obviously need to do some more work in terms of long-term cash flows. Just an observation, one of the things we thought about was whether this could be expressed in terms of in relation to a sort of discounted cash flow valuation, because that would provide a sort of more natural way of filtering out what's immaterial and would also pick up those sort of three components of what's the business doing now, what are management plans for the business, what's the long-term sustainability of those cash flows. So that would be an alternative approach of building in that long-term perspective. So relate the user's assessment of future cash flows to discounted cash flow methodology, because that then gives you a ready way of looking at whether a piece of information or a matter would materially move.
But if we talk about long term, as let's say a period of 10 years from now, yeah, and longer, apart from perhaps insurance companies, I think there are very few companies that have any idea as to what their, yes, future cash flows will be at that time, with any degree of precision, let alone to talk about discounted cash flow.
Yeah, I'm sorry, just to be clear, that is not asking the company to report about on those cash flows, but it's asking the company to say, if I were building my own valuation model of this business, would I take this factor into account? Would I need a certain piece of information in order to do that? So that would be the thought process.
Terminal value.
That makes sense.
Deepa?
The factors that go into it.
Thank you. Yeah. So my first comment was whether there needs to be a principle around forward-looking information. And what I'm trying to get to here is to distinguish the fact that management commentary needs to be thinking more about the prospects of the business compared to financial statements, which tend to be more historic. So it's in some of the terminology in terms of future prospects and things like that, but whether it needs more emphasis. And hearing some of the comments around the table, I think there's balance to be struck here, that we're not looking for a prediction of future cash flows here, but there does need to be a bit more focus. Something we found in the UK that strategic reports aren't very looking out too much into the future. It tends to be 3 years maximum. So we're trying to get that message across.
That's a long time in business.
Yes.
It is a long time in politics.
And then my second point was similar to Lisa's. So when I read this, I look at value creation as being a little bit detached from the business model. And to me, the business model is more than just what the business does. It's how it generates and preserves value. And if that could be emphasized a little bit more, I like the idea that value creation is a thread that runs across this piece. But linking it back to the business model would be really helpful. And finally, I've been struggling this morning a little bit with a concept of operational information, which is in the appendix. I understand what it's trying to achieve, and I support the content of it. Where my head takes that term to is thinking about detailed segmental information and away from the strategic focus. So my question is more around whether that's the right term to be including in the objective.
It's a good challenge. We've tried a number of terms, none of them are ideal for a number of reasons, but suggestions welcome.
Trent?
Three or four comments. One is, I don't necessarily have a concern with how users are framed here in the appendix and elsewhere, but it to me looks like they're targeted to have less knowledge than the financial statement users are. If you look at the definition of financial statement users, willing to study the information with reasonable diligence and have a good knowledge of the business and industry and accounting, that's a higher standard than we have here. And I don't know if that was deliberate or not, but it's something that looked to me. And that's probably in terms of question one. In terms of question three, the one thing that troubles me from the outset here is you have a tension between users and preparers. Users want everything, but if you give users everything they want, you're going to compromise yourself in terms of the secret sauce or whatever, or your competitive advantage. And if you don't have that competitive advantage anymore, you're not going to produce the returns that you have. So it's kind of a self-defeating item. So I don't pretend to tell you where the correct balance is in there, but there is a tension in there. And The other thing we talk about, just to your point earlier about long-term view, 3 years, long time in business, discounted cash flow doesn't work for necessarily. If you have a, if you are making a generational infrastructure investment, a DCF will not work for you. And that's something that we learned through IS 36 exercises. Also, forward-looking view, again, 3 years. I just concerned about getting sued, you know, to cut to the chase. The more you talk about the future, the more there is for some lawyers to come along and make your life unhappy. So.
Ben?
Yeah, just a few comments. I do think you're probably going to have to look at this time horizon question, and I know by not talking about it is that, so, you know, the theory has been for a long time that value of the company is discounted cash flow from the future to the day, short term and long term, and everyone has understood that within business and investors, but we debate it all the time, and part of the very live debate is that there hasn't been enough focus on the longer term part, however you might define it, and different companies do define it differently, but it is a sort of separate segment, and I do wonder by completely dodging it, it's like saying, well, just talk about all the material things about the business without defining it. You then don't resolve this question, which is an active debate about where you want to nudge it. And it's very real. I spoke to two or three companies and some boards very recently, and they were asking us, oh, should we reveal our long-term plans or not? Is 5 years enough for this business and where it isn't specific? Some might go out to 10, some might only go out to 3, and that is that. And there was quite a lot of evidence that actually revealing some of that long-term information is actually a good for the company business and things are actually good for investors, but it's a very live debate because within that on that. And that ties into this idea of value creation, because again, most business investors go, you know, that's fine, and this, you know, this concept of shareholder value creation, you know, most people buy into it. But then when you come into it operationalizing it, you know, you can't touch it. You can't say I'm going to increase it 10% tomorrow and these things. It's these other outputs, and we've talked about the terminology about like serving your customers, having a good product and things like that, which then impact that and things that. On the other hand, on talking about the risk and opportunities, it's usually obvious to people the kind of behaviors, for instance, that destroy shareholder value. So even though you can't touch it and things that, you know, we do debate the things that might impact it in buckets, which then are going on to cash flow. So that linkage is there. And that comes to echo on the purpose part. I do wonder whether you want to have a think about that, whether that is long-term strategy, business model, or whether there is something up that. And the other thing that we talked about, which is, it's probably not quite here in accounts, but actually in investor world, we actually often talk about the difference between risk and uncertainty. Because actually, if we really get down to investor world, risk is what you take in a casino, where the rules and the probabilities are actually defined. And uncertainty is more or less usually what we're dealing with in with business world, where they're not defined. So it's this whole known unknowns, unknown unknowns, and things like that. And actually, there's a lot of confusion, and often we have to go, are we talking about an actual real risk here, operational risk, what are the boundaries, or real uncertainty, this business uncertainty, it's a long term. And there might be something around that, acknowledging that there are two different things, and investors, I think, a lot talk about that a lot. I don't know if there is room within this to talk about incentives or incentive philosophy, and this is the boundary thing about where it hits into governance and other things. But that is something I am very interested in, whether I read it in that statement or here, particularly about the philosophy of how you are incentivizing things in general, rather than specifically, oh, you're going to get 20% of your bonus based on X KPI, that thing, which does tie in slightly into purpose and things. And I do think actually for some better companies deserves a place in there. Often you see it sometimes at the front of proxy voting type stuff, and it's very poor, usually very boilerplate, and like, well, this could apply to any 1,000 companies in the world, not very helpful. So if there was something about that that does interlink with the kind of metrics that management are finding really material for them, which is kind of interesting debate. And that's the part of the forward-looking work. And I get the litigious part, particularly in North America. But from an investor point of view, those forward-looking prospect parts are often some of the most interesting things. You know, what is management choosing to emphasize or not, and where we're thinking about that or not in terms of stewardship. And the last point which comes onto that is that a lot of this is geared, I guess, for growing companies about where they're going to be. Some of the debate occurs in investor land about, I guess, what I would call managed decline, Or should you really be owning these assets? Actually, should you be divesting these assets? Or actually, should you not invest in these assets anymore? And that's often where we get some of these big debates and sometimes decide not to invest because management said, oh, we think we can do well with these. And we're saying, well, actually, you're not the best owners of these assets, or these assets shouldn't be further invested in. And that's some of the interesting tension, because through the eyes of management, if you want to build the biggest, best businesses and companies, you might well go, oh, yeah, we are going to go ahead and invest in that. And so parsing that out for us, I think, can sometimes be quite interesting. And I don't know whether that comes in, because this idea that, you know, probably businesses want to try and live forever. And from our point of view, that maybe actually we don't, or we make our allocation decisions different. And this is like, you know, give us the money versus, you know, reinvest the money is a debate which comes up all the time.
Larissa.
Okay. 3 points. The first one on several people have made comments that more than 3 years is a very long time. I have to vehemently disagree. The mining sector has capital commitments and cleanup commitments that easily go out 20, 30 years. You can't model in detail for 20 years, but you can certainly inform your users of the capital commitment and the risk that you've already committed to in that time. You could argue that they can shut down the mine. Often they can't, because there are mothballing requirements that can be rather expensive. Ask any South African platinum company. You would also be excluding a large part of the industrial sector, specifically long-term manufacturing plant commitments, builds that speak to capacity constraints and construction. The irony is that insurance is probably the least of your worries, because it's not uncommon for insurance companies to have shorter durations than banks with their loan books. Because insurance companies, it stays with
them.
Banks often have longer duration risk than insurers. Mm. Because within insurance, people can jump insurance companies more easily than they tend to jump banks on loans, depending on the market. So I would challenge that point. Related to that, many people chuckled at DCF, IDCF. But I would counter-argue that any company with a high payout ratio, if you look at the whole retail sector, it's all about next year's sales and how much you're going to pay as a dividend. The moment you pay that dividend, you have a capital constraint for the year after that. So if we're going to talk about long-term value creation, we need to talk about what they're going to do after that. So we claim that we want to avoid short-termism, but then we're almost counter against that. And the point that I actually wanted to make before I got all excited is on the whole value creation, completely buy into the concept and completely buy into the concept that cash is king. But what we're not addressing here is the how. What I find is that companies are very good at telling you what they're going to do, which 9 times out of 10 is pretty obvious. They're very bad at telling you how they're going to get there. And that is not only cash flow commitments to grow your book or to expand your factory, but also capacity constraints and skill sets. If great example, and we see it quite prominently in insurance distribution in China, where companies have grown their workforces tenfold in 3 years. The problem is not, usually at a relatively small capital commitment, well, cash commitment, because you just pay the salaries, and if they don't sell, you don't pay them commission. But the reality is they often sell bad quality business because they're inexperienced, and that bad quality business is going to cost you money later down the line. So I do think if we're going to get this right, we need to strike a balance between how they're going to get there and not just telling us what they're going to do.
Jeff?
Yeah. Just turn to Appendix A4. I really do emphasize you need to rethink the sequencing of these. And in particular, you know, in my view, A4E, the start of it should be the first thing. You know, what is the strategy and what is the entity's business model? The opportunities and risks, I think, come later when you're thinking about, you know, future outlook. And let me just give you an example of how I think about business models. And it's very difficult to do that without talking about a specific business. And I admire your attempt to look at sub-Saharan manufacturers. But, you know, so let's take, you know, an asset manager. You know, there's nothing secret about our business at all. Everybody knows what we do, right? So you start with revenues and you work upwards to find out really what's going on in the business to understand the business model. So revenues are a function of assets under management and basis points that you can charge. And each time I'm just going to take one fork. But in both of those, you can measure them. There's financial data you can give us. Assets under management is a function of market return and flows. Flows are a function of brand quality, marketing, sales force, distribution, and performance of funds. Performance of funds by far being the most important, because that's what gets you your five-star Morningstar ratings and so forth. So, again, plenty of data you can provide to that managers can provide to their investors about that. Performance of funds are a function of the team's process, the style at any given moment in time, the capacity in that fund, because you'll get to the point where if too much funds have flowed into that fund that performance will start to deteriorate, and controls that management have around that. So, and all of those things can be measured, all of those things can be reported, and they're outside the audited financial statements, but most of that data can be audited. Then the question is, well, how am I going to sustain strong performance? Or if I've had poor performance, how am I going to turn it round? Management ought to be able to talk about that. It's not a forward-looking statement. It's an aspiration. Everybody understands the ability to do that is constrained. But then we get additional data that will help inform that. You know, what is staff turnover? If you've got guys with great performance numbers and they're all leaving, well, we need to know that. Similarly, if you've got people with poor performance numbers and you've adopted a process to change them, tell us about it. To retention tools like share-based compensation, performance bonuses, improved trading processes so you're executing better, how does that work? And then how are you investing in research to try and generate more alpha? You know, all of those things are narrative that are fully within the scope of being able to describe your business model. And by the way, there is secret sauce in there, but it's not a secret sauce that anybody that you're going to share some of your research-based stuff. But there's nothing difficult for people to understand about that business model, and frankly, I think that's true for almost any business. When you look at the previous experience of management teams, 90% of them have come from other places in the industry. So everybody in the industry knows what each other's doing. So actually, I think the users are actually the guys who need the most instruction about a business model where everybody who's operating in that industry already knows whether they're a competitor or not.
Ryoko.
Okay, thank you. I have a quick comment about the time horizon. So I think the time horizon is very important. Also, the definition of the term is showing the length of a management eye. And also, I think the user will assess their risk and return based on their own investors or lenders, their own time horizon. So, but unfortunately, sometimes I found the term is different between users and companies. For example, in Japanese companies, so they think the long term means really long, over decades, or sometimes it's a permanent. But I think it's different from the views of investors. So I really want, when revising practice statement, to require to expect to the company to show their definition about the short term, mid term, and long term. Maybe generally it is short term is 1 year, and mid term is 3 or 5 years, and long term would be the over 5 years or 10 years. But I really want the good communication is based on the same understanding about the term and assessment of the management decision making. So that is all. Thank you.
Alessandro.
Thank you. One comment on stewardship and in which sense that should be read. I think it is clarified later on that this stewardship of the entity's resources, although I think if that is the case, that, as I said before, that leaves out an important piece of management commentaries as they are prepared today, which are meant to inform the public or to keep companies accountable towards the public for a number of aspects, including environment and social aspects, etc. So I think if that is the direction, we need to think how we deal with what is left out, and as I mentioned earlier. And also, I'm not sure that not considering stewardship towards aspects that matter others than the company would cover one aspect that is important also for users, and that is how is the company behaving as a corporate citizen. So I think that is also an important aspect, that if the stewardship perspective is only on the economic resources of the entity, would be lost, because the users will no longer know how, also from a reputational perspective, reputational risk perspective, how the entity is behaving towards the public. Second comment on the through the eyes of management. I understand that the objective there is to build some flexibility in the approach. However, perhaps could help to link it to some sort of rational expectation of the user's needs, so that explicitly in the drafting saying that it is the perspective through the eyes of the management of what users are rationally expected to need.
Vincent.
On the appendix, I'll just back Rodrigo's comments on point A5. I think it's better to omit that particular sentence. On question one, just very briefly, I think much has been said on the value creation. I've seen a broad sense there's need to manage expectations around the application of the stamp. I do understand the arguments you're making in as far as coming up with an operational notion of application. But I think there's been a broad expectation across frameworks that there'd be greater connectivity. So I think you need to come up with stronger arguments than it's interpreted inconsistently. Then just very briefly on time horizons, I think slide 12 is very helpful. You know, what you're trying to accomplish there in terms of ensuring there's no bias towards short-term or long-term. But on the buckets you've got, I think it would just be helpful to show that to varying degrees, what you have under addressing matters relating to and information to support an assessment of, that would pertain to each of the time horizons. It's just to varying degrees. I don't think it's exclusive to either of those time horizons, but I think the slide you have here is very helpful.
Okay, before we break for lunch, I would give Julia the unenviable task of recapping the main messages that we have received.
Yes, thank you very much. And so, obviously, we have received lots of valuable feedback here, which we will go through very, very diligently. I suppose in terms of key messages, the time taken away, and I wonder if Peter, Matt, or our board members have something else to add to that. So if I look at what we proposed in terms of overall approach for the objective, which is build a conceptual framework, so to have high-level objective, and then have a discussion sort of focusing on users and preparers. So relative to this model, what I think I've heard is that slightly mixed views on the overall objective, but I think there is a general agreement with building on conceptual framework as long as we address the confusion around the reference to cash flows and make it very clear that we are not expecting a company to provide some sort of forecast. So we need to work on that, but I think there is a general agreement with that direction. Now, looking at the user versus preparer perspective, it sounds like what we've proposed so far is a little bit confused, and maybe we need to go back and think about it a little bit more. And perhaps there is something about, and that's one of the models that we did explore, perhaps there is something about the what and the how. Sort of user view is about what information you provide, and then through the eyes of management is how you provide this information, how you tell the story. But we will go back and think a little bit more about that. And obviously, you've had detailed wording suggestions on the appendix that we will also consider. Now, it sounds like with time horizons and long-term value creation, again, probably we need to go back and think a little bit more about how we make sort of the time horizons more explicit, and also if we can make the links between cash flows and value a little bit more explicit. That's my takeaway. So I think we've heard a few calls for bringing in a more explicit focus sort of on the future and forward-looking information. But again, we need to be quite careful and do it in a way that does not create an impossible task for preparers, I suppose. And then I guess in this session, as long as the as well as the morning session, we had quite a few comments on terminology in general. So again, that's something for us to take away and think about more. So these are my sort of, you know, high level at 30,000 feet. That's my takeaways.
I think that was a very adequate summary.
Okay. Yeah, I'd just add to that. I think Jed made a number of points in relation to business model that we need to take away when, and come back to when we address that area of content explicitly. But overall, I think a bit more clarity around time horizons and what is meant by value here is needed.
Okay, so I suppose we are going to have lunch in the kitchen, right?
I suppose so.
Yeah. So I invite you to our lovely new cafeteria with a beautiful view on the Thames. And we will come back here 1:15.